Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. The bi-week edition, a little late in the week, I apologize for that, but it is the bi-week, of course. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Colton Pouncey, who is on location in Chicago, as the bi-week now begins for him, as it's been a... I was telling you before we got on the air, you got screwed a little bit here, man. Like, the Monday night, Monday night before the bye feels like a little bit of a cheap bye, does it not?
Yeah, we've got a shortened week, man. You know, this is the second, so like... I was supposed to go on a trip before the season. I was going to go to Toronto with Max and James, and we had this whole thing planned out for Labor Day weekend. And then the Lions released their schedule because they had the Thursday game to start the season.
Right.
And they ended up practicing on a Friday and a Saturday. So I had to be at the facility for that. So I got that ruined because they had to start the season on a Thursday in front of everyone. And then for this Monday game during the bye week, you know, they play on Monday night, so I already lose a day there. Then they have to come back on Tuesday with Campbell. Then there's a trade deadline, and
it's
all
the
of a sudden I got a shortened bye week.
Oh, so, and it's the damn deadline. Well,
the second time they've done this to me, man.
But yeah, that happened.
Here we are.
Well, we'll talk about the deadline as well as we get into this, but because the Lions did make a move, but maybe not the move folks wanted to see. But I suppose we'll talk about that. But also, Colton, the last week's game or Monday night's game, you know, we talked last week in that Ravens performance. This is an interesting one about, you know, no one had any sort of hesitation in saying they would be ready to play this game. We knew that that would be charged up, ready to go. And they were, right? I mean, they were. They came out firing. I mean, there are nitpicks in this game, of course, and we can talk about that too. But by and large, and we talked about this last week, this team just doesn't lay on the ground for very long. They get up after they've been knocked down. And there are qualms about how they, you know, executed this game for sure. But, like, the effort and everything else, exactly what you want to see. And, I would say, pretty familiar, right? Every time they've lost under Campbell, for the most part, and really it's been a bad loss, I should say, the next game is either a win or, like, a really tough, you know, L that they fought all the way to.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, one thing we always talk about this team is just the way that they can respond and get off the mat. And, you know, we talked about this last week that we kind of expected this to happen. And it's, you know, the Raiders are a team that you should
beat. Yeah, well, right.
And then they ended up firing their coach and their GM like 2 days later.
2 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, that was, how about that? I was still up for that, so that was great to see on Twitter.
Yeah. I get up early now, my favorite tweet on that really quick was like somebody, he says, the AM Twitter shift is really going to freak out when they see what when they see what happened. And I got up really early that Tuesday, and I'm like, oh, yeah, there it is. Anyway, go ahead.
I mean, but in terms of that game, like, I think you saw pretty much everything you want to see. You know, the Monday night crowd was awesome. Like, first and foremost, like, the Lions had this sort of light show. I think they're giving like some sort of lights to people when they walked in, so yeah. It was kind of like coordinated lights, which were cool. It was like blue and white. It was like really deafening in there. It was like one of the loudest games I've been to. And just in terms of like the play style, like,
right,
Lions really dominated that game. Like, the score is a lot closer than it should have been, but absolutely, they really dominated on both sides of the ball. Only gave up 157 yards. They recorded 486 yards. So, like, that should tell you all you need to see. Like, the scoreboard, it's a win's a win. But, like, they really dominated that in the trenches, you know, start to finish. So good effort, and like you said, a good bounce back and kind of exactly what you want to see.
Good bounce back, and, you know, they were shorthanded as well. You know, they didn't have the full group up front. I thought Taylor Decker played great in considering the situation. So did Panay. I mean, because you don't have much in there, and you have to do what you have to do. And Max Crosby is awesome. My God, as we saw again, like, he's one of my favorites in the league, and it's been that way for a while. But, I mean, I still thought everything inside acquitted itself the way it needed to. We can talk about the red zone and all that in a second. But the thing I really wanted to see in this game, more than anything, and I agree with you that this probably, if you look at it, it's probably like a 45-6 game if they execute like three more plays, right?
Yep.
But the thing I wanted to see in this game was Gibbs, because didn't seem like Montgomery, there was any point in bringing him in here before you go to the bye, unless, you know, whatever. But like, I just felt like this was going to be a great chance for them to let him loose again and really load it up and just give him the whole game. And I don't know, man. Like, I don't know about you, Colton, but I felt a little bit of vindication as someone who has not abandoned ship and did, in fact, think this guy was worth the first, or at least a first-round graded player coming out of the draft. And he showed it, the whole thing. And that's what you can get out of this guy. I don't know, you know, the durability and everything else is something that we have to see. But that's the money that we saw at Georgia Tech. At Bama, all the between the tackle stuff and the outside stuff, 9 catches. Talk about Gibbs, man. That was a hell of a day.
Yeah, to me, like, this was sort of the vision, right?
Exactly.
That's why Brad and Dan were celebrating, and, like, I think...
yeah.
Who's it, Brad, that, like, knocked the wind out of Campbell at the draft?
Broke his wrist damn near, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you react the way to get a player like that, and this is, I'm sure, vindicating for them, too, watching this game and saying, you know, look, this is why we drafted this guy. He's going off. Like, this is everything we wanted to see. Because he was doing it in the passing game. He was running between the tackles. He was getting tough yards. He was extending some of those runs, like, getting the second level and breaking tackles and spinning off dudes. It's like, that's what they were missing last year. You know, Swift could get you yards when they were available, but he wasn't sort of this, like, break tackle machine. And the durability issues were there. Not so much this year, which is kind of funny, but he's managed to stay healthy this year, which is good. That was always the issue with him, though. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're talking about the situation, like, you know, contract year, injuries weren't there. It just never worked out here, I guess. And so they moved on, and they got a guy that they could kind of replace him in that role and might be a little bit more dynamic. And when you're watching him run, like, the 27-yard touchdown, that was awesome, because he's you know, running between the tackles. He's patient. He kind of stops, and then, you know, sneaks through and breaks out for a touchdown, gets to the outside, gets to the edge, and runs it in for a 27-yard touchdown. And that run, to me, I saw that when we did our film review with Gibbs, you know, kind of watching his tape from Georgia Tech and Alabama, we saw a lot of those runs on his film.
Yep.
And it's like, it's in there. You just got to give him some time. And he might be one of those rhythm running backs where, like, if you only give him, like, 10 carries, you know, it might only get you like 40 yards. Mm-hmm. But you're waiting for the big run. The big run's going to come if you give him like the touches and give him the opportunities. So he finally got that workload. He got 31 touches in this game, which is more than I thought he was going to get. And he made the most of it. I think he had 189 yards, something like that. And
sounds right. Yeah.
A touchdown and 152 on the ground on 26 carries. And it's like, man, that's an impressive outing. And, that's something that the Lions saw and finally got a chance to see it in person.
And something that you said there is so critical with him, because, like, if you give him 10 carries, it's not like he's going to just get 10 yard. You know, he's going to still, even if he doesn't hit a big whopper for you, as we've seen, he's going to still get 4 or 5. He's going to still average. I've got some numbers here for folks. I looked at True Media, actually, because this has been a topic of conversation, right? The Gibbs / Montgomery, is it an upgrade over Swift and Jamal? And, like, I think that we'll just sit here and say it's absolutely an upgrade over Swift plus Jamal, because Jamal Williams has 38 carries through Hoverman. And I love Jamal, but, I mean, everyone on this podcast told y'all that was coming, okay? Like, he was, you know, either ready to throttle down or move into a different role, and they upgraded. So there's that. Yards after contact per rush. Gibbs is number 7 in the NFL at 3.24. Right behind Bijan, who's 3.25. Montgomery is 13, and Swift is somewhere in the 20s. Okay, on that one. Let's see actually where Swift is. I think Swift's right behind him. My bad. Montgomery's 22, and Swift is 23. So actually, they're both about the same on that after contact. Now, here's the one that separates it that people don't see. Yards before contact per rush. The number one rusher in the league on this is Swift. The number, that means who's running behind the, he's ahead of Lamar Jackson in this, okay? Who's running behind the best offensive line, who's got the most space? It's DeAndre Swift. So, if you look at the box score numbers and everything DeAndre's putting up, and he stayed healthy and he has done everything with those available yards that has been asked of him. I'm not trying to cut him or say that he's been a poor player because he hasn't been. I don't know how you look at all that stuff, and there are more, you know, and not see exactly what they were trying to do. Now, people want to argue on the positional value and all that sort of thing, but, like, even those people would say this is an upgrade, clearly an upgrade. Now and long term, it's an upgrade, right? And I just don't know how else you decipher that.
No, yeah. Even before this game, I think, like, last week I tweeted some stats from a SIS, and they had broken and missed tackles combined. So broken tackles they generate as, like, power-based. Like, you make someone miss, like, with a stiff arm, something like that, or bounce off tackle.
Yeah, that's cool.
And a missed tackle is considered, like, agility-based. So you're just juking someone.
Yep.
So they combined broken and missed tackles and had leaders for NFL rushers. This is before the Monday night game, but Dave Montgomery ranked 8th in the league with 16. And Jahmyr Gibbs ranked 12th in the league with 14. And both those guys have missed time. So
That
tells you those numbers could be even higher if they were playing and healthy 100%. And, you know, whatnot. So you're getting two backs that are basically borderline top 10 in missed tackles and broken tackles combined. So that shows you, like, sort of the effort. It's like everything we talked about with Ben Johnson saying he wants to turn those runs from 4 and 5 into these home run runs. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why you get backs like this that can break tackles and generate missed tackles in space. And that's what they're doing. And they're getting exactly what they wanted when they talked about this in February. And here you are, you know, 9 months later, and you're seeing the production on the field. And I think that's, you know, probably everything they wanted to see. You know, seeing Gibbs go off the way he is, I'm sure a lot of people were probably impatient. And
oh, I think some of that. I wanted to see more.
I mean, like,
I was for sure. I wanted to see.
I think some of it was towards Gibbs, but I think most people were, like, rational, understanding.
Oh, no, yes.
It's just opportunity-based. Yeah, like, coaching staff giving those carries.
Yes.
But I also understood why they were doing it that way, but, you know, it's just a matter of time. You got to be patient sometimes. For the crowd that said, oh, we shouldn't have spent a first-round pick on a running back, I still understand your sentiment to a degree, but when you're getting the production, the results like this, and it's working for a team that runs the ball as frequently as the Lions do, and as, you know, variety-based as they are in their run game and how diverse they are in their run scheme, getting two backs like this at a high level, playing at a high level behind this offensive line, you can win with this crew. Like, there are different ways to win the NFL. You can do it with a Pat Mahomes. You can do it with a diverse running game like the Lions are doing. So, I mean, when you don't have Pat Mahomes, you have to pivot, and the Lions are pivoting, and it's working for them. So, I understand why they went out and got Gibbs, and I think people learned that on Monday night.
Especially when you get into the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you get to the playoffs and you find a way to have the offensive line standing upright and somewhat healthy, and you got both those guys, it's a problem. It is a big problem for people. You go to the playoffs every year, and we see some guy that you've never heard of that has 680 yards rushing, right? Because he's the last man standing on whatever team he's on. For a team that runs the ball and is dedicated to it, I totally understand what they're doing. And I would also say, you know, I think a lot of people looked at this, and fair enough, they looked at the flip or the switch as, like, okay, you swapped Jamal Williams for Montgomery because that was a free agent situation, and then you swapped Swift for Gibbs, which, you know, you could look at it that way if you wanted to. I would actually look at it the other way, though, because I think Montgomery and Swift are very similar football players. They are very, very similar in terms of their ability to take care of available yards, missed tackles, forced, all that sort of thing. DeAndre has agility. They can both catch the ball. And I think they probably even out, like, DeAndre's strengths probably even out the things that Montgomery does better. He's probably a better between the tackles guy. But the real gain is that you added Gibbs for Jamal Williams. And, like, that is not even comparable. Like, and I don't want to dog on Jamal, but it's not comparable. Like, and this is a weapon that is adding receiving, you know, 9 catches in this game. The last 2 weeks have been big time for this kid.
Yeah, no doubt. And to me, it's like, yeah, we're not piling on Jamal here, but Jamal was never, like, a lead back until he was forced into that role.
Yeah.
When Swift was out, Swift had to miss so much time last year specifically. I mean, he missed time his whole career, but last year you couldn't really rely on him midseason, so they had to go to Jamal. And I know he had 1,000 yards and 17 touchdowns were nice, but that was a product of the offense and the offensive line. It wasn't so much as Jamal breaking tackles on the second level or, you know, making stuff happen on his own. So when you talk about the upgrade there, it's like, okay, you're upgrading from a 1B probably in Swift and then a number 2 in Jamal to like 2 1As in Gibbs and, you know, Montgomery.
Exactly.
Like both these guys could start for other teams.
Yep.
So you have two starting caliber running backs, not a backup, not a guy that's a part-time running back, like a third down back, or you can't trust him to be like the injury stuff. You know, I'm looking at the running back room and I say Gibbs can start for like 30 teams.
Absolutely.
Montgomery can start for like 20 plus teams. Like that's sort of the deal here. The Lions have two really good running backs that a lot of teams would covet. And I know there are teams that wanted Gibbs a little later on, like in that first round, like the teens. Yeah, the Lions have them both, and they're not apologizing for it, man. Like, that's sort of their deal.
Yeah.
They want these guys, and they're here, and they're producing.
That's the takeaway. They are unapologetically running the football, and they do not care what you think about it. And that is that's the whole thing. And that's how they're building the team. That's how they're structuring the whole thing. And I don't see that changing, you know, anytime soon. Okay, the gripes about this game, though, Colton, of course, you know, they don't finish. In the red zone, they don't finish, you know, almost 500 yards and 26 points is really not what you want to see there, of course. A win's a win, and it was a dominant game, so it doesn't really get too bad, you know, in every situation. It wasn't like these drives weren't productive or anything. So, I don't know what to make of that. I got asked about that a few times this week on different stuff, and I was like, you know, I kind of wondered if, you know, last week, the Ravens game was Ben Johnson's first really, like, that was not a good day. And, like, for anybody, it was a bad day for everybody, including him. And I did wonder, like, was he going to try to, like, overcorrect this week and, like, go a little bit too much? And I got to say, like, after the receiver pass, that was open, so fair enough. If Amon-Ra throws it, it's a touchdown.
Throw the ball, man.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, was it necessary? You know, maybe not. So, and I do wonder if a little bit of that crept in there, at least in the first half. Second half, you know, I think they were just trying to motor the game down and get out of there, but... I don't know. What's your thoughts on Johnson's day and then the offense in general? I'm not concerned, but if it happens again, I think I maybe would start to get concerned. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
I'm not concerned because that's, I mean, when you're playing the Raiders, you don't have to be too concerned. But going forward, like, yeah, I think it's fair to wonder, like, you know, do they need to be more efficient in the red zone? Because I'm on True Media right now, and in terms of red zone touchdown percentage, the Lions rank 21st in the league.
Yeah,
at 48.1%, and they're getting there a lot because they have a good offense, but they're just not converting. So like the points are still going to be high because they're
there all the time. Yeah,
they're there all the time. So you're going to put up more points the more opportunities you have, but their efficiency is not great. 48.1%, that is below league average, which is 50.3%.
It's not the worst you've ever seen.
53.6%.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, it's not the worst, but it could be better. They're 5% below league average. And that's been a theme. Like, the Ravens game, they got down there a few times, and they just, I don't know, maybe they're pressing too hard, and you're already down. So I understand that one a little bit more. But if you're a fan, you're watching that, I can see how it's a little frustrating. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do think, you know, Montgomery is sort of the red zone back there.
Yeah,
so when you don't have him, like, your number's going to go down a little bit. So I think when they get him back and probably Jonah in there a little bit too, like, you could see that number rise. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to kind of have some critiques
and
about
Frank,
that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bit, that's all part
Frank
of that.
Frank too, yeah.
That's all part of the red zone discussion with the Lions, especially in this game when you don't have your interior at all and Glasgow has to play, you know, not out of position, but sort of out of position because he hasn't played there all year anyway. You know, at center. So, you know, that's the adjustment that sort of gets lost in the cracks there. But also, like you said, I didn't get too hot about it because I still gained 500 yards with the backups in the middle. Sorsdahl hung in there pretty well, I thought, for the most part. I didn't, again, like, would they look awesome? No, but, like, it's the same thing that we talked about in camp. He's not getting embarrassed. He's not getting, like, ragdolled. He was actually decent in as a run blocker. He had some pass pro issues, but, you know, he's a rookie. So that's good, too, you know? I mean, I thought... all that stuff was good to see. You got any other thoughts on this one before we talk about the old deadline here? Because I know that's a hot topic as well.
Yeah, I mean, they took care of business. They got the win, and they're 6-2 now. Like, second place in the NFC right now, in a good place. The bye week is here, and, yeah, I mean, they're not going to apologize for that win, but it could have been better. I'm sure they're
going
to look over the tape and try to fix some of those things going forward, but you can't complain with the win.
I mean, and look at the division, everybody, right? The best team in the division other than Detroit is Minnesota, and Cousins is gone for the year. So, you know, they traded for Jacoby Brissett, I think, right? Is that what happened? They traded for somebody. Who'd they trade for? Did they not?
The Vikings, they traded for Josh Dobbs.
Dobbs, not Brissett. So they got him, and I'm like, okay, so that's happening, but they're also going to start Jaren Hall, so that's not doing well. So we're already in a situation, and Jefferson's not coming back. So you go down
Jefferson
the list
again.
Jefferson
might be again. Back in a couple weeks.
Well, okay, a couple weeks, but he's on IR anyway for a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, my point is here is that the Lions' lead here could be pretty tough to overcome. I mean, we'll see if Dobbs... He played well. Dobbs did. I don't know why I called him. Yeah, but he played well in Arizona, I thought. All things considered, in the first couple weeks. That's another one. I don't know what the hell Arizona's doing with Kyler. I assume he's playing now. I guess if they're going to make that trade.
They might go with Clayton Toon for a week, and then
there's a whole
Kyler comes back next week.
There's a whole big contract thing with Kyler, man, that's like really weird. Yeah. It's like if he gets hurt again this year, the Cardinals are on the hook for the whole bag next year.
Oh, boy.
Or something like that. However, we're off topic, whatever, it's bye week. Gannon, I believe, wants to play Kyler, the coach there. So,
yeah, because he wants to win.
Right. He's trying to keep himself in the job. So,
yeah.
Clayton Toon might be the guy as they tank the rest of the season. We'll see about that. But anyway, Lions lead the division, Colton. I mean, it looks, I don't want to say insurmountable here, but they are in a firm driver's seat with the schedule they have, the quarterback situation in Minnesota, Chicago, Green Bay. You know, it's looking okay here. Life is good, as Dan Campbell said.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, the biggest concern for the Lions is, like, preparing for the playoffs and the teams you're going to face there and making sure you're getting in enough work in the regular season against some of these quarterbacks and making sure you give the good looks. And I don't know. I think that's what you should be concerned. Obviously, you still got to play the games. But, yeah, the Vikings are – they sold off a little bit at the deadline. They did trade for Dobbs, but I don't think he's going to be a savior.
No. He's solid. With
Kirk out.
Yeah.
I mean, if Kirk was out, like, 2 weeks, then maybe you could – still be in it, but
exactly.
I mean, not the rest of the year.
Right, and that's not...
Yeah. The Bears are the Bears, and they're bad, and the Packers are kind of in a nosedive here, so that division's theirs, man. Like, if they, they're not going to lose at this point, so just about getting yourself
so.
Right.
We'll see what happens, I suppose, but they're in a good spot. Okay, trade deadline. Lions don't make any moves on defense, and the one add they do make is Donovan Peoples-Jones sending a six-round pick, right, Colton, to Cleveland. For Donovan, who was a sixth-round pick originally from Cleveland, so that's an even swap for the Browns. Well, before I talk about Donovan, Colton, defensively, that was the focus for most people. My biggest gripe if they have a regret later in the year, it'll be that they didn't add a corner at the deadline. That was me. I didn't think that they were going to add an edge. I can understand the case that gets made for it. I didn't see that happening for a number of reasons we could talk about, but that was my take on the defensive side. I don't know what you thought. But also looking at the market, too, we saw Elam was hurt, right? He went on IR right away. Buffalo floated him and then immediately put him on IR, so that was a red herring or whatever. So I don't. Johnson didn't get moved from Chicago. So I don't know. What did you think about the defensive stuff there, or lack thereof?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week. The cornerback market was probably what we were looking for in terms of the biggest need. Just because it's not even that Jerry's not playing well. I think he's bounced back after like a rough start to the season, but like your starting corners are Cam Sutton and Jerry Jacobs. Cam Sutton probably on like a championship level defense is like a good number two, not a number one.
Right.
And Jerry's probably maybe a two or three somewhere in between. So when you're going against the quarterbacks that they'll be facing, if you make a playoff run, you know, a lot of these other teams have really good weapons and you're wondering how they can, you know, cover them. So that's going to be a question for down the road. But even if they didn't want to add someone that could potentially start for them at corner, I still think they could have used like a depth piece.
That's what I was thinking. Just a guy who like, started
just
before.
Another guy that's out there. Like I know Dante Jackson from Carolina, there were rumors that he was available.
There you go.
I don't believe he got moved. So he's still with the Panthers. So I was kind of thinking maybe they go for a guy like that and you just trade
a
sixth, like a 2025 sixth, like they did for Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen. So they must feel comfortable. Either the some of these teams didn't want to make moves, or they just feel comfortable with, you know, some of the other depth pieces they have. Maybe Stephen Gilmore comes on in the second half and they're ready to give him more opportunities. I'm not sure, but they're riding with the guys they have.
They are.
And that's a little concerning, but, you know, we'll see. Like, you know, Brad tends to prove us wrong a lot of times with some of these moves, or lack thereof. So we'll see. But, yeah, I think corner depth is still kind of an issue because, like, that Ravens game, when Jerry goes down, like, two days before the game, and you're kind of like, all right, who's going to start here? And they put Will Harris on the outside, and Will Harris doesn't have a good game. And obviously he wasn't the only one that didn't have a good game that day, but it's like, I don't know, man. You don't really feel comfortable with some of these depth pieces just because they're either unproven or they haven't been able to get it done this league, at least that outside corner for Will. So you do kind of wonder there, but they stood pat, and that's kind of what they were thinking this deadline, I guess.
Yeah, that's my one thing. It was like, you know, if you were willing to do, because there was a need at receiver, and, you know, Marvin Jones is gone. So if you're willing to do away with a sixth, you know, for a receiver, I was like, why aren't you willing to do away with like a fifth or even a fourth for a corner? But that's another, you know, I mean, that, we'll see. You know, that's the one thing, though, like, you're 100% right, Colton. I think if you could just add one more guy who started a game before, multiple games, another pro back there, that just gives you another option if something's not going right one day or whatever it is. That's maybe enough to get you by, you know, and I think that would have been one thing I would have explored. The edge piece, I was fine, I think, with them staying away from it for a few reasons. I think that the contracts that would have needed to be involved with those maybe would be a little tricky, given the fact they also have to pay some other people here. You never know how that goes over in the locker room either. You know, I don't know if they, you know, they, I know they don't want to mess with stuff. But also, and here's the money point, a third-round pick and a second-round pick is not nothing to this football team yet.
No, it is not.
Okay? The Eagles, the 49ers, and the Chiefs, it's nothing to them. That is, it's like, you know, fairy dust. Doesn't matter. They're already Super Bowl-contending football teams. That's not Detroit. And if you think that that's the case, then you're lying to yourself, and that's, you're comparing them to the wrong comparatives, whatever you want to call it. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. So I don't think... And I like Chase Young, and I would agree with you, everyone that said that's a good deal, you know, a third round, whatever. I'm not sure if that's just a throwaway, like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I don't think you can just say, if it doesn't work yet. I don't think the Lions are in that position. And I'm curious on your thoughts. I think you pretty much agree with me on that one, but I'm curious on your thoughts on the whole thing there. I didn't hate that they didn't swing at all, you know.
Yeah. So my initial reaction to seeing Chase Young go for third is... wow, the Lions could have done that? Like,
yeah, right.
They got two thirds. Like, they couldn't get they could use a pass rusher. Didn't do that move. And now he goes to one of your rivals in the, you know, that you might end up seeing.
Yeah, playoff,
you know,
hunt?
In the playoff hunt team. But then you kind of sit back and you take this, like, above view, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, here, I'll start here. Third rounders, I think, are more valuable than people think. Absolutely. Jalen Ramsey was traded for a third rounder.
Yep.
Like, if there's a deal in the offseason that's there with a guy that kind of fits what you want and you're comfortable signing him, or he's already on a deal that you're comfortable with, you can then trade a third rounder for one of those guys in the offseason if they become available. So now you keep that asset. Even if you don't trade for one of those guys, you now have four picks in the top 100. Those are premium picks. Those are projected starters to me, like, whether it's early on or down the road. Mm-hmm. If you're drafting a player in the top 100, you should expect them to start at some point. So now they have four picks in the top 100. And they're not at a point roster-wise. While it's gotten so much better than it was in previous years, I still think that they are a tier below,
I agree,
you know, a Philly or San Francisco or some of these other teams, right? And so I think they could use one more draft with that sort of capital to kind of continue filling out the roster, continue finding, like, gems on, you know, rookie deals, especially as... you know, your window starts to open up and some of these other guys are getting closer to, like, the end of their rookie deals that you're going to have to pay down the road. You know, maybe you get a guard in the third round that can replace Jonah so you don't have to pay him, I don't know, 18 mil or whatever he's going to command in the open market. And maybe that's how teams sort of reload, right? Like, what's on these picks. So I think they're mindful of that. And I also look at their comments, and they said all along, and this is kind of what I wrote the other day, Brad and Dan are so transparent, and they'll often tell you exactly what they're thinking.
That's very true. Yeah.
Like, leading up to, like, key decision-making periods, whether it's free agency or the draft or the trade deadline, they'll tell you. this is kind of what we're thinking, you know, we'll see how it goes. Like, their comments are pretty revealing. Like, Brad told us, like, 9 days before the draft that he's not afraid to draft a running back in the first round because it worked for him in L.A. And then 9 days later, he drafted Jahmyr Gibbs 12th overall. Mm-hmm. So it's like, they said they wanted like secondary six. Help. Yeah. They said they wanted secondary help and defensive help in January, and then they spent there in free agency. And it's like, a lot of GMs will, like, lie to you or try to, like, misdirect you or, like, throw you off the scent. I don't really feel they do that. They don't tell you exactly, but they'll, right. like, tell you what they're thinking a little bit, and you can kind of pick up from there. It's on you to kind of determine whether, you know, you're on the right track or not. So I felt like this was another one of those situations because Brad was on the radio. He went on 97.1 – or, sorry, Dan was on the radio. He went on 97.1 The Ticket and said it's got to be the right player. It's got to be a right fit culture-wise, timeline-wise, and he's got to be, like, one of our guys if we're going to bring in an outside voice. You can't mess with the locker room. You know, it's got to be a good fit. And he said that Brad was scouring the market and made so many calls and was bringing him, you know, options. And they talked, and they didn't determine that there were too many fits like that. And so when I hear them say that, you know, you hear stuff about Chase Young and maybe work ethics and stuff sure. like that. You know, Montez Sweat, he's had some issues in the past. And I look at the compensation for some of these trades. Montez Sweat went for the 37th overall pick right now, like currently slotted at number 37 overall for the Bears. The Lions aren't beating that unless they trade their first or they trade a second and a third. You know, mm-hmm. like that's a lot of capital for a guy that you don't know much about. And if you're gonna trade all that, you have to re-sign him. Like the Bears are currently in that position where they have to re-sign him to justify dealing that second round pick,
right?
When they're still rebuilding. And now Sweat has all the leverage in that situation, and he can command whatever he wants, and the Bears will have to pay it or let him 100%. Walk. And that, yeah. either way, they're going to have to either overpay or lose this dude that they traded a second-round pick for. So that's their situation. I look at the 49ers, and again, they're in a much different position. They're further along. They've been close. They've made Super Bowls and lost in the past. So it's like their window is now, and they're not really too concerned with some of these third-round picks or a comp pick. That's what they gave up, a comp pick, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I look at their situation. They can afford to just roll the dice and say, oh, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But for them, I think Chase Young is very much a rental. They're not probably don't have the cash base to re-sign him to the deal that he wants. Yeah. So you're paying a third round pick for 9 games in the regular season and then however many playoff games you have. And that's it for Chase Young with the 49ers. So the Lions could have traded a third. Sure, they have two of them. But are you comfortable trading a third-round pick for 9 games of Chase Young when you're probably not going to re-sign him anyway because you got to pay all these other guys? And then all of a sudden you lose that third-rounder that you could use to fill out your roster elsewhere because there are still holes on this team mm-hmm. That they could use to acquire, you know, good players in the draft and continue building that roster. So, yeah, I mean, I get the frustration, but I think the Lions have been pretty open about their plan and sticking to it this entire time, and like they're not going to speed up their timeline just because they're winning some games. The fact they're winning some games means they're on the right track and their decisions have been proven correct. So why are they going to change their whole process now when this is what's gotten them this far in the first place? The fact that they've stuck to their plan all along. And I know people are mad. I think the biggest disappointment for the fan base is that they kind of perceive the line standing pat as Brad and Dan saying, you know, we don't see ourselves as Super Bowl contenders and we're not there yet. And I guess I understand it to an extent. I mean, like,
they're not.
It didn't give them the validation that they're going all in this year, but like they were never going to do that. Show me one time where Brad and Dan have said this was a Super Bowl year. Show me one time where they said this is our year, we're going to win it all this year. It's Super Bowl or bust. They've never once said that. This is year three of a total teardown.
And their best players are rookies and second-year guys.
They're on their second and third years in the league. So they're getting there. And the fact that they're competing in this process is so encouraging. That's exactly what you want to see. But I think people were kind of disappointed in the message it sent, the perceived message that they aren't going for it. But to me, it's like these other teams have been in the playoffs for years and have gotten close or, you know, haven't been able to get over the hump. So a third-rounder, when they're so close, they can touch the Lombardi. Yep. Is nothing to them, where the Lions, they're not at that point yet. They need another year of building the roster, and then next year I think you have that conversation and say, yeah, we'll trade a third, like we're cool with that, let's get this guy and we're over the top now, we're one player away now. The Lions are not one player away, but but they can still compete with some of these teams. They've proven capable of competing with good teams over the last year and a half. So to me, it's like, let's get in the playoffs first. Let's see what we can do. Maybe you end up beating a Philly. Maybe you end up beating a San Francisco. You never know. They haven't done it yet. They haven't proven it yet. So they haven't had the opportunity. So let's get in the playoffs, see what we can do, and then readjust and reevaluate in the offseason. Then we can kind of go from there. So I think that's sort of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Again, people are going to feel some type of way regardless, but that was my read on the situation. And I kind of wrote about that the other day.
I completely agree with everything you said. I mean, I think that's really well put because, yeah, they're not going to change their math for any scenario or situation just because it's working. Like, you know, if they were to shotgun this and, like, you know, mortgage it and ruin it, like, everyone would be like, oh, what the hell, what are you, like, that's just not realistic. I mean, when you look at the situation, I think that I look at it like this, okay? I know people have a hard time tiering teams in the NFL, especially. College, it's much easier. The NFL, it's hard, right? Because I try to look at it in simple terms. There are three tiers annually, usually, in the NFL. Teams that are going to contend for a Super Bowl, teams that are going to make the playoffs, and teams that are not going anywhere. That's, you know, whether those teams make the playoffs in that middle tier is up to them, but those are the rosters to contend for a Super Bowl, rosters to make the playoffs, rosters to not do anything with. And in some years, you have the occasional, this team is above everybody in the fourth tier. The Lions are firmly in the second one. They're in the second tier. Now, they're toward the top of that one. They're climbing it, but they're absolutely toward the second tier. And they could climb that thing for years and keep banging their head at the top of it, and they still won't get up because, like Colton just said, you got to go to the playoffs, win games, do something within your own organization and have something there that allows you to then change your math to take a chance. And then you say, our footing is so solid that we'll take a chance on Jalen Carter next time. We'll do, you know, that is what you're trying to get to. That's where the Eagles are. That's where the Chiefs are. They didn't get there by just swinging for the fences every single time like it appears they do now. They didn't get there by doing that. And anyone who tells you they did is an idiot. Like, I don't know what else to say on that one. But we'll transition from there to wrap this up. Donovan Peoples-Jones, what was your reaction on that one? My old, I've got some Donovan Peoples-Jones thoughts. What's your reaction on that one?
I didn't have any thoughts. I didn't follow his career too much.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know he's a local kid, played at Cass Tech, is that right?
He did, yes.
So, Cass Tech product, great athlete, he's got the size, jump ball ability, like athletic ability, returned some punts, I believe, too.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, good pickup. I mean, Brad came out, like, kind of out of nowhere before. Cam was set to speak at 3 p.m., I think, and then Brad randomly showed up out the door at 3 p.m., and we're like, oh, what is he doing? He gets up there, announces the trade, says it just happened, and he wanted to let us know, which is cool. We appreciate that.
Yeah, nice.
And was talking about Donovan Peoples-Jones, and, you know, someone asked him, like, you know, why did you guys go out and get this dude? You know, I think people were kind of wondering if that was like a JMO type deal, or you're sending a message to him. And Brad kind of said, you know, well, we lost Marvin. You know, Marvin's not with us anymore, so we needed, you know, a guy to replace him. And I think when you look at kind of their abilities, their play styles, it's somewhat similar. But, you know, I think I saw he only has like 8 catches this year, and he hasn't just really hasn't been used a ton, which is weird because seemed like he was coming along there for a little bit in his career and getting some opportunities, and then it kind of like fell off the face of the earth. So I don't know if it's because they added some pieces, but
well,
kind of fell out of favor there, I guess.
Yeah. So here's the book on him. You will not find a better full package athlete than him in the NFL as a receiver. There's none. He is the most explosive. His jump numbers at the combine set records, along with his, I think he was a sub-4 4.440 guy as well. So he is a literal, like, world-class athlete. That's what Donovan Peoples-Jones has always been, to a point where it can look effortless, to a point where you think he's not trying, and then he'll flirt with actually not really trying, and you'll be like, he's not going full speed, and he's not doing the things that you need. And this was him in college. That's why he was a 6th-round pick, right? His ball skills were not where they needed to be. Sound familiar? You know, anybody? Stop me if this sounds familiar. His ball skills were not where they needed to be. He did not, I don't think, spend enough time on Michigan had like a mess on the staff at the time with no wide receiver coach. He did not spend enough time on fundamentals. He was a freak athlete who played receiver and sometimes played hard and sometimes decided if you wanted to. And having watched him a little bit, and I went back this week and tried to go back through Because I would always think about, I'd watch him in college and be like, he should be better at everything. And it's like, you're judging, and I would always feel like I'm criticizing him too harshly, you know? Because it's like, he's such a good athlete, he should be better at all this. But it was like, he was still learning how to play football. And I think that what I watched last year and this year is I've seen a guy who is at least he has grown as a blocker to a point where I think he certainly understands now that his ticket in this league is to be an athlete and be a part of, because he's a big guy, he's 6'2", 200 and whatever, be a part of the run game, be an honest part of it. That's something Jameis has never had a problem with, but Donovan, I think, has gotten way better at that now, and he is a more reliable pass catcher than Jameis's probably ever been, because he's played in the NFL, he had like 60 catches a couple years ago.
Yep.
Look, if you can get Amon-Ra St. Brown and Josh Reynolds to rub off on Donovan Peoples-Jones, and he's 24 years old, and he's ready to turn into a pro who does it every day, that's going to be a gold mine for a 6th-round pick. And, like, that's why you do that, but I wouldn't get ahead of my skis yet, because, like you said, Colton, there were reasons why he wasn't playing in Cleveland, and it's the consistency, or lack thereof. Sometimes you'll get all the smoke from him, and it'll be like, oh my God, look at that. And then sometimes you don't get any of it, and he just vanishes, and you're like, that's not okay. So, you know, maybe this is, maybe the trade and the urgency is playing, like, I saw somebody mention, I think Dan Wetzel mentioned this, like, Cass Tech is like, people tailgate in the parking lot at Cass Tech for Lions games, okay? This could not be a more cool situation for him. I'm sure he's jacked up for it. I'm curious to see what kind of player they get coming out of this thing here, because if he's fired up and focused and ready to prove people wrong, like, that could be a hell of a trade or a hell of a pickup. I'm with that. I get that whole thing, but I would be cautious.
I think he has every reason to be motivated.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a fresh start, you get out of Cleveland where you kind of fell out of favor there and get to go back home and play for your hometown team and mm-hmm. got a support system here and a franchise that kind of traded for you for a reason and thinks that you can be a piece for them. So the opportunity's here. He's just got to make the most of it. So we'll see.
And he's a good kid. Yeah, I think he'll fit in with that sense fine. I remember him being pretty quiet. He's not a loud, you know, loud guy in that sense. So I don't think there's going to be any issues with that.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I had no issue with that. The only thing I would say is defensively, whatever. But I agree with you. I you know, whatever Brad says is one thing. Obviously, yes, they had a hole with Marvin, but those Jameson and Donovan Peoples-Jones are going to compete for reps going forward. And right, like, there's no other way to look at that, because both those guys are very. They can do the same things. Donovan can be an X and a Z and anything else you want him to be, same as Jameson. So here we go. Like, seems like a cage match situation to me with two guys who really need to be thrown into a cage, which actually is pretty cool. And I'm very curious to see who comes out of this thing, man.
Could be one of those iron sharpens iron situations.
Yes.
And maybe it's the best out of both of them.
I think you could get that. That would be pretty cool, because those two guys are burners, man. And if you could light up, but they have the same exact issues, I think, or they, you know, Donovan used to. It was like the, man, that looked amazing. Why do I have to wait 45 minutes to see it again? You know, like,
well,
do it every time, you know, like that kind of thing. But
I think that's my thing, because people are like, oh, this is the end of the Jameson Williams era now.
No,
it's
no,
like,
no, no, no.
Well, if you're going to put an end to that, wouldn't you bring in a guy that's like more reliable than
yeah,
Jameson?
Right.
Because like these, like you're, the way you describe them, it's like they're kind of similar. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like maybe both of them can help each other in a way. Like,
I hope,
we'll see,
I hope that that's what happens, because I think they're both good kids who, and I think in Donovan's case, like, when he was at Michigan, it was not, they were not what they are today. Obviously, sign stealing aside, they were not the program they are today in terms of, you know, the coaching staff, the level of training. It was haphazard, and, like, they didn't have a receivers coach, okay?
That's crazy.
Like, right? He didn't get...
How did they not have one?
Because Jim Harbaugh just decided not to. There were years, Colton, where I was convinced after Donovan signed there, they would never be able to sign a receiver again. Because they had him and Nico Collins, and they could not get the ball to either of them. And it was just like, what in the hell is happening here?
I'm
Nico,
just trying to figure out the offensive staff setup where you don't have a...
Yeah.
Like,
well,
they have an
extra like,
something
yeah,
else
yeah, they
coach?
Had a, they had a bunch of run game and pass game coordinators and things
oh,
of this
God.
Nature.
Okay.
But yeah, and it was like, Nico figured it out by the end and separated himself and became a much higher draft pick. And you see, obviously, he's performing at a high level now. And Donovan never did. And it was like, I had never quite figured out, like, in my own head, like, how much of that is on him and how much of that is on the staff. And I think, you know, having history as our guide here, like, it's both. It was both. There's hope there for Donovan Peoples-Jones, for sure. He's not a lost cause. And he's not like a replacement though either. So I am very curious to see how this works out with both these guys. Yeah, that's going to be interesting for sure.
Yep. No doubt. I'm excited to see it and get to know him a little bit. And
yeah that's, be a, excited
that's a
for
big,
sure.
big deadline pickup. We'll see how it goes.
He'll have his fans, man, in the stands. There'll be a lot of those number nine jerseys. They loved him and the punt return stuff. That was one thing I'll say that too. I know people were like, well, Raymond is a great punt returner. And I get that. And he is. But they asked Khalif to do a lot. And, you know, if Donovan can take something off his plate and add some juice while he's doing it, then and if that's all he does, then that's worth a sixth-round pick, in my opinion, right? Like, if that's all he does is return, like, two punts like that are pretty good, I'll take it if I'm the Lions.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I'm with it. I like it.
All right. You got anything else this week, Cole, before we get out of here? You can start your bye?
No. I'm going to enjoy my weekend and hope you guys all do the same.
Absolutely.
No fighting on Twitter. Be nice to each other.
Yeah, especially this week when there's nothing to even fight about.
Enjoy. Here's what you guys can do. You can take solace in the fact that another NFL franchise was freed from a New
Patriots.
England system.
Do you see that Deshaun wrote that they put the basketball hoop in there already?
That was hilarious. Death, taxes, a New England assistant getting fired, and the vibes improving.
I wrote, I was like, if they put couches in there, the Raiders are going to go on a winning streak.
Ping pong table too. Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, I think that'll do it for this week. Appreciate you guys all for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and all that. Tell your friends. We'll be back next week with a longer episode, of course. That's why I'll get back to it. But Colton, I'm Nick. Enjoy the bye, everybody, and talk to you later.